From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
And welcome to Washington Watch. We're actually broadcasting from the road the rest of this week. We're in Michigan tonight for a gathering with supporters, some important races happening here. Then we're headed to North Carolina, where I'll catch up with the Values Bus. And remember, you can keep up with the Values Fleet by going to valuesbustour.com. We've got buses rolling across the country. We've got one in California. We've got events taking place out there. You can be a part of that. We're about a dozen other states with the other Values Bus. Go to valuesbustour.com. Among our scheduled events in North Carolina, we have a pastor's briefing in Charlotte on Thursday. I'll be preaching at Christian Faith Assembly in Charlotte on Sunday morning. Then we head to Tennessee, and I'll be speaking Sunday night at Higher Ground Baptist Church in Kingsport, Tennessee. So if you're in one of those areas, come out and join us. But coming up on this Tuesday edition of Washington Watch, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, he didn't throw ice, but he did pour cold water on the hopes of liberals who have been working to derail the Kavanaugh confirmation by saying a vote will happen this week. We'll talk about that, along with the findings of Rachel Mitchell, the veteran prosecutor from Arizona, that asked the questions of Dr. Ford last week. Former federal prosecutor Joseph Genova joins me. And yesterday, President Trump announced a new trade deal with Mexico and Canada, essentially tearing up the old NAFTA trade agreement. How will it impact U.S. consumers? Will it lead to more U.S. jobs? Former Cincinnati mayor and Ohio Secretary of State Ken Blackwell is here with those answers. Also, despite the increased focus on international religious freedom by the Trump administration, the religious hostility unleashed during the Obama administration unfortunately continues. Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy and Director of our Center for Religious Liberty, joins me a little later with the latest. And we plan to take your phone calls on this Tuesday afternoon, so stand by. I want to hit this again one more time. If you would like to help partner with the relief efforts in North Carolina, FRC is partnering with Samaritan's Purse. And so everything you give will be doubled up to $10,000 to this effort to help the folks in the Carolinas, South Carolina, North Carolina. So if you'd like to help be a part of that, you can text FRC Relief, that's one word, FRC Relief, to 41444, 41444. That's 41 and 3/4. Text FRC Relief. All right. Both today and yesterday, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell went to the Senate floor to speak to the Kavanaugh confirmation. Now, yesterday, he highlighted the report from the veteran prosecutor investigator Rachel Mitchell. Now, she's the one that handled the questions in last week's hearing. The bottom line from Mitchell's assessment of Ford's testimony was this, and I quote from her report that she sent to Congress, "I do not think that a reasonable prosecutor would bring this case based on the evidence before the committee, nor do I believe that this evidence is sufficient to satisfy the preponderance of the evidence standard," end quote. Here's what the majority leader had to say about this report yesterday on the floor in the Democratic response.
"So will our Democratic colleagues listen to this expert opinion, although it conflicts with their political mission? Don't hold your breath. Nor am I optimistic they will stay consistent and accept the conclusions of the supplemental background investigation the FBI is now conducting on top of its 6 prior investigations of Judge Kavanaugh. Democrats demanded a supplemental investigation. They proclaimed it would be a game changer. But Mr. President, I'd bet almost anything that after it runs its course in the next few days, we will then be treated to a lecture. That anything short of a totally unbounded fishing expedition of indefinite duration is too limited or too arbitrary or somehow insufficient. We all know that's coming."
Well, joining me now is Joseph DeGenova, former U.S. attorney and founding partner of the Washington, D.C. law firm of DeGenova. And Tozing, for 4 years, DeGenova was the United States attorney in the District of Columbia, which is the largest such office, having more than 400 attorneys. Joseph, welcome to Washington Watch.
Delighted to be with you.
Let me ask you a couple of questions. You reviewed Rachel Mitchell's memo to Senate Republicans, where she said that, you know, a reasonable prosecutor would really wouldn't bring this case before a court of law. Now, she made very clear that this is not a court of law. This was a committee. This is a political issue, not a legal issue. But even so, she really kind of tears apart the credibility of the story that Dr. Ford brings forward.
Well, Rachel was absolutely correct. This was this testimony was, in my opinion, completely unbelievable. It was not credible. It did not hold together. There was no internal consistency. She could remember none of the key facts, where it happened, when it happened, who got her there, who took her home, all of the sorts of things that are fundamental to a situation like this. In addition, none of the people to whom she pointed as being at the party corroborates her. In fact, they basically refute what she has said or have never heard of such a party, didn't know anything about it. And in their subsequent FBI interviews in the last 48 hours, they have confirmed that they do not know what she is talking about. I take a very different view than some people have taken of Dr. Ford. I think Dr. Ford is a very sick woman. I think she suffers from very serious emotional and mental problems. That testimony that she gave, and I have now watched it five times, was the testimony of an adolescent. It bore no resemblance to the testimony of an adult. And I believe it was an act. I believe she purposely designed her demeanor, her voice, her posture to make it look like she was a child to get sympathy. For example, she said her lawyers have said that she was afraid to fly, and yet she confirmed categorically that she flies all over the place for business and for pleasure. Her lawyers said that when the committee asked her, the prosecutor, Rachel, if she had been informed that the committee had offered her three times that they would come to California and meet with her, she said she was unaware of that offer. That's a lie. Her lawyers are bound under the law to advise her of material facts and offers. There's no way that two seasoned lawyers like her lawyers didn't tell her that. They told her, and she just didn't want to be interviewed out in California. She wanted to be interviewed in this public setting.
Well, let me.
She didn't know what the meaning of the word exculpatory was. Can you imagine? This is a woman with a PhD. She didn't know what the word exculpatory meant.
Joseph, let me stop you there for a minute, because that's a key point. We were talking about that earlier this week with actually yesterday with Tom Cotton, who said if her lawyers did not advise her of that fact, that they are they're in serious jeopardy because they have not fully informed their client of what was available to her. So either that's the case or she perjured herself.
I don't think there's any doubt that she perjured herself. I must tell you, I take a very unsympathetic view of Dr. Ford. I'm not like a lot of people who have been very sympathetic to her. I'm a former United States attorney. I've prosecuted all kinds of serious cases. I've been a counsel to Senate committees. I've been a counsel to the Senate Judiciary Committee and have run confirmation hearings. This was a bizarre performance, and it was a design. This was an act. If you go back and look at this tape a couple times, and you watch her, the way she fakes using this girlish voice, the voice of an adolescent, it is quite obvious that this was a fraudulent piece of testimony. And I've seen some analysis of it by some psychiatrists who have concluded the same thing. But I came to that conclusion on my own. As a seasoned litigator and prosecutor, you know a fraud when you see one. She's a fraud.
Well, let me ask you this, Joseph DeGenova. Do you think she was acting alone, or was this a concerted effort? Orchestrated.
I don't know whether she was acting in concert with her lawyers, and I would never accuse a lawyer of that. Her lawyers may very well have believed her and presented her testimony with that good faith belief. But as far as my opinion of her, I think certainly her lawyers and the people that paid them, and it wasn't her, we do not know who paid them. They're saying they're doing this pro bono. I don't believe that for 1 minute. Whatever their role is, she knowingly did what she did in that hearing, and I did not believe a single word. If you go back and you look at this, just as an adult, if this was as traumatic as she says it was, she should have gone right to the living room instead of going into the bathroom across the hallway, run to the living room and ask for help. She didn't do any of that. And the reason she says she went to the bathroom is because if she had gone down and screamed at the other people at the party that they had tried to rape her, they would have remembered it. So she conveniently puts herself into the bathroom. The two boys go downstairs. She goes downstairs and leaves the house and doesn't know how she got home. Nonsense.
Well, and as you pointed out in your opening comments, all three named eyewitnesses have submitted statements to the committee denying any memory of the party whatsoever. So there's no one that says they agree with her story. How far would this get? As a former federal prosecutor, how far would this case have gotten in the legal system?
Oh, it never would have been prepared by us. We used to have a sex crimes unit in the office. In fact, I set it up when I was the United States attorney. As soon as I became U.S. attorney in 1983, I had prosecuted rape cases on my own when I was an assistant U.S. attorney. This case would have never made it anywhere. First of all, 36 years later, no witnesses, no DNA, no testing, nothing. At the time of the event, if she had reported it, presumably she could have remembered who was there and that. But that only works if, in fact, it really happened, which, of course, it didn't.
So let me ask you, has the FBI spoken to her in this latest in background investigation?
According to her lawyers, she has not been interviewed yet, and that, of course, is proper. In a situation like this, when you're finishing the seventh background investigation on Judge Kavanaugh, what you would do is you would interview all the other people who have been named as possible witnesses. Then you would interview Dr. Ford. You would always interview her last so that you would be armed with the statements of the other so-called witnesses. In this case, all of the witnesses refute her story.
Joseph DeGenova, thanks so much for joining us and lending us your insight on this case.
My pleasure. Delighted to do it.
All right. Joseph DeGenova, former federal prosecutor and U.S. attorney. Look, I haven't found anybody who does this for a living that says that this looks legit. It's all about politics. All right, when we come back, the president yesterday essentially tearing up the NAFTA treaty agreement with Mexico and Canada, forging a new trade agreement. What does it mean for consumers here in the U.S. and jobs? Ken Blackwell joins me next. Don't go away.
Out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting FRC.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, Civil Liberties Attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, Senior Research Fellow in the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, broadcasting live from Michigan. We're on the road this week up here in Michigan. Some important races happening here. We're meeting with supporters tonight. Then headed to North Carolina. Got a number of events going there. Keep Up With The Values bus is... It's buses. We've got one out in California that's going to be out there until the election. Go to valuesbustour.com, and we've got some events coming up in North Carolina. I'll be there, so you can check that out. Also, I want to challenge you. Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready to take the pledge? The pledge. The pledge to pray, to vote, and to stand. To pray for our nation. To vote in this election and to stand for our biblical values. Go to PrayBuildStand.com and take the pledge. Share it with your friends. Share it with your Sunday school class. Share it with your church. Today, and each day, we've got prayer points leading up to the election. Today, Tuesday, October 2nd, forgiveness. This is this week we're focused on the church. Pray that Christians beginning in the local church will model forgiveness by forgiving one another for wrongs, regardless of who is responsible for the offense. And there's obviously scripture to back that up on the prayer guide. Go to PrayVoteStand.com and sign up and take the pledge. All right, the Trump administration, negotiators for the Trump administration reached a major agreement with Canada on trade over the weekend. President Trump made the announcement yesterday from the Rose Garden, an extended press conference. He had the Canadian Minister Justin Trudeau with him. Formerly known as NAFTA, the North American Trade Agreement, now it's known as the USMCA. That sounds familiar. It's the new U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. And it's a deal that the administration says will reorient the supply chain away from the south, from Southeast Asia and back to North America. Joining us now is former Cincinnati mayor and Ohio Secretary of State Kim Blackwell, who serves as a senior fellow for family empowerment here at the Family Research Council. Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch. Now, one of the issues that is projected to be impacted by this is the automobile industry, which is a big deal in Ohio.
Oh, absolutely. Under NAFTA, automobile makers could qualify for zero tariffs if 62.5% of its of the vehicle's components were manufactured in the United States, Canada, or Mexico. that goes up to 75%. But in conjunction with that, 30% and by 2020, 30% of the automobiles manufactured have to be manufactured by folks making a wage of average wage of $16,
which is pretty significant for places like Mexico.
Oh, absolutely. The other and by 2023 that would go up to 40%. Mm-hmm. So this is a good deal for automobile workers. It's a good deal for dairy farmers, U.S. dairy farmers, because it gives them an opportunity to go deeper into Canadian markets. I am sure that the Canadian dairy farmers, you know, are going to be kicking and screaming brought into this agreement. But it's only fair. Look, this was a trilateral pact that was in need of modernization. And that's is exactly what the president has done.
Well, the stock market here in the U.S. has responded very positive to this. The Dow jumped 100 points, closed with a new all-time high. So obviously business is pretty encouraged by this.
Absolutely. The psychology is very positive. Look, in 2016, an overwhelming number of American voters and American citizens said that we were on the wrong track. President Obama was starting to talk about new normals and accepting a pretty stale status quo. And you and I have talked about President Reagan, that status quo was Latin for the mess that we're in. And Donald Trump got elected to be a disruptor of a right. stale, unproductive status quo. And he's done it. People told him that he couldn't make NAFTA better. In fact, he has now shown that through hard-nosed negotiating, he in fact can make NAFTA better for American workers and American business, and as a consequence, the American people.
So this is good for U.S. jobs.
It is good for U.S. jobs. It's good for workers, and it is good for the American people to know that we don't have to get locked into bad deals, mm-hmm. deals that are unfair, out of balance in terms of the interests of Americans.
So you can have trade policy that's America first.
Absolutely. You know, if you're negotiating for the American worker and the American people, you have to negotiate from that standpoint. Believe me, Trudeau was negotiating from the standpoint of Canada first. What he underestimated was just how much he needed a deal more than President Trump.
It's interesting. Trudeau was in the Rose Garden with the president yesterday for this. And remember the exchange that they had at the last meeting there in, I guess it was in Canada, mm-hmm. when the was it the Group of Eight or whatever yeah. that met. And there was a heated exchange. It didn't end well. But that, again, goes back to Trump's negotiating style, that you got to play tough.
Oh, absolutely. And you have to understand what your interests are. You have to understand what your strengths are and your opponent's weakness. And again, the president understood that Trudeau needed this deal more than he did.
So I assume that being that this is good for U.S. jobs, the impact upon consumers?
The impact in terms of consumers is that, one, we have stabilized the North American trade zone. And as a consequence, I think that you're going to get, you know, more business, better business, and that always means better prices.
So I assume, Ken Blackwell, that Democrats, unlike, you know, back in the 90s, are not going to be running out this election cycle saying it's the economy, Stu.
I don't think so. As a matter of fact, they might be confused, and you might hear them not say USMCA, but YMCA.
All right, I'll leave it with that, Ken Blackwell. All right, folks, don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch. On the other side of the break, we're going to be talking with Travis Weber. Religious hostility still on the loose around the world. Don't go away. That's next here on Washington Watch. Then your phone calls.
feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen. Sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Good to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, I made reference to this, but it was back in June when President Trump was at the meeting of the G7 and would not endorse the communique with the G7 based upon Trudeau's, what he said, false statements regarding massive tariffs on U.S. farmers and workers and so on and so forth. Again, just pointing to the fact that the president's style, which is unorthodox in many ways, and or I should say unusual for the president, but his negotiating skills have worked out thus far, yesterday being another example of it. All right, well, one of the areas we hope to see more success in is during the Obama years when there was religious hostility here at home. It opened the door to religious persecution abroad. That unfortunately continues, even though this administration is doing its best under Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to address it. We've seen recent flare-ups in India, Pakistan, and even more, the latest coming out of Nigeria, where Christians have been the targets of various sects. Joining us now is Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy at the Family Research Council and the Director of our Center for Religious Freedom. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, give us the latest on Nigeria.
Yeah, so Nigeria, this is another tragic event similar to what we've seen before, where you have roving bands of Fulani militants. These are Muslim militants, increasingly radicalized Muslims, and some are speculating that they're being trained and armed by more well-known radical Muslim groups. But nevertheless, they are roving through parts of Nigeria, targeting Christian communities, slaughtering them, inflicting other sorts of horrific religious freedom violations on these Christian communities, and then taking their goods. You know, some are claiming that this is motivated by non-religious factors. Even so, it still breaks down along religious lines, and there's clearly a link between the identities and religions that these people are adhering to and who's being targeted. And these Christian communities are just being slaughtered. They're without security. They're not being protected. And it's really just tragic. This is a situation that really needs to be addressed.
I mean, this is the latest case in Nigeria, four children, a grandmother among 17 Christians slaughtered by the Fulani tribes. Have we heard anything from the State Department speaking directly to this latest incident?
I haven't seen anything from the State Department on this incident. You know, this, again, you know, a specific attack by Fulani, you know, very tragic. A number of people here who were slaughtered in their home. And I haven't seen anything. You know, the President Trump, the president, in a press conference a while back, the slaughtering of Christians in Nigeria, he raised that specifically. But really, you know, this is an issue that is getting drowned out, I think, unfortunately, by a lot of other foreign policy concerns, and no one speaks up for these people. Their fate is going to be continuing being slaughtered. And they really need someone to advocate for them, and the issue needs to be raised with the U.S. government, with other governments, and the Nigerian government needs to be pressured to make sure that they're protected.
Yeah, I know that the ambassador at large for international religious freedom, Sam Brownback, has been to Nigeria. He spoke with us when he returned. It is a very volatile situation, and you know, could very well be the epicenter of yet another case of genocide as these Christians are being targeted there. We mentioned India. India has become a real problem with its non-conversion laws, its prohibition against conversion. And we know that there's been some discussion, the president, I think, even mentioned it yesterday, that India would like better trade arrangements with the United States. What's the possibility of the intersection or connecting the issue of trade with religious freedom?
Yeah, I hope it's a real possibility. And I think with President Trump's willingness to address religious freedom in other contexts and other situations, I think it's a better possibility than what we've seen. The chances are better that we're going to see this addressed than we've seen in the past. Just yesterday, in a press conference, he noted that India called him and wanted to negotiate a trade deal. If this happens, I really think that he needs to raise religious freedom and make that part of the negotiations. He really would be bolstering and solidifying his leadership on the international religious freedom issue if he did this. And I think he clearly has many supporters and like us and others who really would strongly support, you know, such a move. India has had ongoing issues with attacks on Christian communities and others that are at least at a minimum, the government is not dealing with them, and it seems is aiding them and aiding on and encouraging such radical Hindu nationalism that makes these problems worse. So I really think this is a moment of opportunity for President Trump, as if this deal is renegotiated, to really incorporate a religious freedom issue into it, address the lack of freedom in India, anti-conversion laws preventing people from freely worshiping and exercising their faith. And Christians are often wrapped up in these laws and accused of all sorts of things that they never engage in. They're just sharing the gospel, and yet they're accused of fraudulent conversions and the like. I think this is a real great opportunity for the administration on this point.
All right. We'll have to leave it there for today. Travis Weber, thanks so much for joining us. Folks, don't go away. On the other side of the break, we take your phone calls here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. We're back after this.
Do you feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, civil liberties attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, senior research fellow in the technology policy program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. As I mentioned, we're on the road in Michigan today, North Carolina tomorrow, Tennessee on Sunday. All right, 34 days until the election. Have you taken the pledge to pray, vote, and stand? Go to TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over, or just go to PrayVoteStand.com and take the pledge. Share it with your friends. You need to be praying, folks. All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to open the phone lines here in a minute, but I want to set the stage. The Senate Majority Leader yesterday, he said this again today, but yesterday went to the Senate floor, and essentially he laid out kind of the timeline of what's happened. You know, first it was, we need more time to review all the documents on Kavanaugh. All right, so they gave him all these documents, more documents than any Supreme Court nominee in history. Then, you know, they had these, you know, they did everything they could to derail. Remember the fiasco in the opening day of the confirmation hearing in the committee? I mean, just unleashed, unhinged. Then on the eve of the vote for and in committee, they drop this letter. All right. Then they say, well, we just have to have a hearing. We got to allow her to have a hearing. And then, you know, we can, that'll be good. We just need to have a hearing. Give her a platform. So they did. Gave her a platform, let her come and testify, brought Kavanaugh before the committee again. Then it was all about, well, we need an FBI investigation. We need an FBI investigation. That's what we need. They've already had six, but we need another one. So the Senate Majority Leader addresses this yesterday on the Senate floor. Here's what he had to say.
President, I'd bet almost anything that after it runs its course in the next few days, we will then be treated to a lecture, that anything short of a totally unbounded fishing expedition of indefinite duration is too limited, or too arbitrary, or somehow insufficient. We all know that's coming. If you listen carefully, Mr. President, you can practically hear the sounds of the Democrats moving the goalposts.
goes on to say in his concluding remarks, the goalposts keep shifting, but their goal has not moved an inch. The goal's been the same all along. And so the time for endless delay and obstruction has come to a close. Judge Kavanaugh's nomination is out of committee. We are considering it here on the floor, and we'll be voting this week, end quote. The goal all along has been to derail this nomination so that the left can keep their grip on the court. Do you agree that the majority leader should move forward with a vote? No more delays. No more obstruction. A vote on the president's nominee for the court. Let me know. 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. Is it time to vote on Judge Kavanaugh? Has any of this changed your mind? Any of the stuff that you've seen in the last 2 weeks? Is there anything credible here as you see it? Give me a call, 866-372-7234, the number to call. Because what we're seeing nationally is, I think most people are seeing right through this. They see it for what it is. It is political theater designed to derail the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh. It doesn't matter who it was, if anybody. He just happens to be the one. Anybody that President Trump picked that described themselves as a strict constructionist, one who will simply abide by the Constitution, call balls and strikes, if you will, as opposed to creating policy on the bench, anybody like that would be opposed by the left. And the reason that this is so intense is because the Scalia vacancy that was front and center during the last election cycle, 2016 election cycle, didn't shift the balance of the court at all. I mean, you had one of the most conservative members, Justice Antonin Scalia, that was replaced by Neil Gorsuch. Didn't change anything. Now, you have Anthony Kennedy in his retirement, who was 50-50. Half the time he was with the, conservative side of the court, if you will. The other half of the time he was with the liberal side. So this does begin that shift away from an activist court that is used by the left to create policy, create rights, find things within the shadows of the Constitution. That scares the dickens out of the left. As you think back over the last 60 years, that's really the only way that they've been able to bring about radical change. But look at its cumulative effect upon our society. Prayer in our schools. 1962 and 63, Bible taken out of the schools. Look at abortion on demand, 1973. Removing the Ten Commandments from our schools and our courtrooms. Look at the redefinition of marriage. The courts. Immigration, open borders immigration policy. Did on any of those issues, did the people ever vote to go the way the courts went? Did legislative bodies do that? With few exceptions, the answer is no. Because that's not where the American people are. And so what they've done is over the last 60 years, they've used the court to reshape America in their own image. And the effect, cumulatively, has been disastrous. Now, it will take generations, if you could ever correct it. I'm not sure you could. You can slow the decay and begin to rebuild society, but it's going to take time, and you'll never do it if the courts continue to legislate as they have. And so the president is right to focus on the courts, and that's why the left is beside themselves, apoplectic. Because they know what this means. They'll never succeed in getting this through legislative bodies. The people will never support them. They have to have the courts. So Mitch McConnell says time to vote. We're going to vote this week. And no more delays. So is it time? Is it time to move on? 866-372-7234, the number to call to get in on the conversation on this Tuesday afternoon. I, for one, am very happy that we are seeing Mitch McConnell move forward, saying no more delays. It is, it's time to vote. It's time to move forward. The effect of this politically, now I've talked about the long-term consequences of this and why this is so significant, but short-term, this is going to have, I think, a very significant impact upon the midterm elections. We're already seeing it in the polling data, where this is putting the squeeze on several Senate candidates. In West Virginia, I mean, this is an issue in the in Joe Manchin's race, because he's being put on the spot as to whether or not he's going to vote for Judge Kavanaugh. You see it in Missouri. You see it in North Dakota. This has brought the court back front and center. It's energized conservative or Republican-leaning voters that had grown somewhat apathetic because of the lack of progress, if you will, from Congress. All right, let's go to the phone lines. Let's go to we have June on the line. June, go ahead.
Yes, hi. I was just curious as to, since all those are against the Kavanaugh, why can't we do a investigation on them as far as their career and before they revote in or whatever, you know? What was their life like? Where were they in college? You know,
yeah, that would be interesting. I don't think too many would volunteer for that. And so it's clear they're holding up a different standard for him than themselves. Speaking of investigations, though, as we talked about with Tom Cotton yesterday, I think there will be some investigations in the Senate of who released this letter that was supposed to be confidential. So I'm hoping that there are some investigations that take place over the actions of not only members of the committee and their staff, but as we talked about, the attorneys representing Dr. Ford. Did they inform her that the committee said they would come out to her and take her testimony? Did the attorneys fail to tell her that, or did she perjure herself there in the committee? June, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening. All right, let's go to David. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes, sir. Hey, I'll ask the question, then I'm going to hang up and listen. My question is, even if the Democrats win in November, they won't be seated until like January 28-something. So isn't there still time to get a Trump nominee through? I'm going to hang up now. Thank you.
David, a very good question. Here's what will happen. There is. The answer, the short answer is yes, there would be time to get a nominee through. In fact, there are, let me look here at my notes. I think there are 68 or maybe a 71 nominations that are still pending at the various levels of the court. I think there's actually 73. That's 10 appellate court judges, 60 district court judges, and 2 for international trade that are still pending. Now, Mitch McConnell said that all of those will be confirmed by the end of the year. He's planning on getting that done, so he's going to be pushing these things through. But here's what would happen if the Democrats, I don't think they're going to win in the Senate, but if, let's say they did, they picked up some seats, they would say, well, look, the American public, there was a referendum on the president's pick on the courts. Therefore, this shouldn't happen until the new members are seated. Lindsey Graham actually said, I think it was yesterday, said that, look, hey, if he's not nominated, if this is rejected or whatever, if he's derailed, let the president renominate him and make an election issue and let the people decide this by how they vote. So that's another way to look at it. David, thanks so much for the call. Technically, yes, they could. Practically, unless the Republicans gain ground, they will still delay and drag their feet. It's time to move forward. Thomas, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I want to say I am from Missouri, and this has really gotten me exercised because I voted for Trump because we have a constitutional republic, just as you said, Tony, just as you said. We have to depend on the legislature. The judges can't be making our choices for us. We don't elect the judges. The judges are appointed by the president and the Senate, and we trust in this because it's constitutionally sound. We trust in them to advise and to give advice and consent. So they either say, we consent to what you're saying and we give you this advice, or we don't for these reasons. They look at it. And if we go down the path where any person that's going to come into public office, it's not voted on, is going to be exposed to every allegation that comes before, we have a nightmare. We don't have we have a nightmare. And I'm shocked that people don't understand this. It's not a question of whether he was guilty or not as a 17-year-old. It's what sort of a judge is he? And he's got a huge track record.
Good, Thomas. Thanks so much for the call and for listening. Again, I hope people, most of our listeners understand this, but this is a great educational moment. It really is, to have conversations with your friends and family that are maybe not so plugged in. Maybe they don't listen to Washington Watch. It'd be a good reason to invite them to listen. But you can take this as a teaching moment to say, why are they acting this way? Why, as Thomas said, why are they going back to what a 17-year-old did or didn't do, whether or not he threw ice on somebody at a bar when he was in college? Why the circus atmosphere in Washington, D.C.? It goes back to the courts. It goes back to how we have come to this point in our society, that these policies that nobody agrees with, but we're having to live under. It's because the courts have been hijacked by the left and held America hostage, Americans, in our own country. We've been essentially carried into captivity. We didn't go anywhere. It's because the courts. That is the only explanation for the, bizarre behavior we're seeing in Washington, D.C. Folks, pray. Vote and stand. Take the pledge. Go to PrayVoteStand.com. Pray for our nation. Vote in November and stand for your values regardless. All right, out of time for today. Thanks so much for joining us. Lord willing, we'll be back again tomorrow. I hope you will as well. Until then, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything that you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.